Angolans voted today in parliamentary and presidential elections expected to keep President José Eduardo dos Santos at the helm of Africa's number two oil producer. The ruling MPLA's hold on the state and its control of most local media has given it clear advantages over opposition parties. But the long-serving leader faces swelling popular pressure to share the nation's riches more evenly. John Schubert of the Center for African Studies at the University of Edinburgh says last year's students' protests shows the emergence of a civil society that is demanding greater democracy, transparency, and justice.
Santos has been in power since 1979, which makes him the second longest-sitting ruler in sub-Saharan Africa after Obiang of Equatorial Guinea. And he's increasingly concerned with his legacy. I mean, since the end of the war, he's been portrayed by the ruling party and by Brazilian spin doctors as the architect of peace, and that's how he wants to go down in history. But he's also afraid that if he steps down, that he will follow the fate of Chiluba will await him. That is, he'll step down, and then his successor will put him on trial for all the money he and his family have embezzled. And so he's very wary of losing power. And he's never really faced a popular vote. And so he sees these elections also as a test of his popularity and of his legacy.
But will they actually be free and fair? I mean, there is the opposition candidate who says that they should be postponed for at least another month to allow them to investigate the procedural form of these elections.
If anything, compared to 2008, the situation's probably worse. I mean, the thing is, the MPLA controls so much of the resources of the state and the administration that, you know, they wouldn't even have to resort to outright fraud on the day of the election, because they control the public media, for example. They have the state budget, the oil revenues at their disposition, whereas opposition parties got their funding for the campaign just a month before the elections. So the whole playing field is obviously incredibly biased. The composition of the Electoral Commission, the control, the electronic counting of the votes, the control of the voters' roll, all these elements that are crucial to, you know, carrying out free and fair vote, they're being controlled. So it wouldn't necessarily have to be something really crude like ballot stuffing, because from the outset the playing field is not level. And obviously there are irregularities. There were irregularities in 2008, and they are the same now in 2012. Only that the opposition's become much more vocal in raising their voice against these irregularities and protesting. But the thing is that UNITA's call for a postponement of the elections came too late. It came this week or last weekend, which makes it look like a gesture of protest more than an actual call for postponement.
Talk to us a little bit about Dos Santos's challenger in these elections.
The main challenger is still UNITA, because it's the party that has the best mobilizing capacity on the ground. But UNITA's been, well, weakened by the appearance of a third party, CASA-CE, led by former UNITA leader Abel Chivukuvuku. And it's interesting because it's in the run-up to the election, the appearance of CASA-CE has energized the political debate. And when the party was founded in March, I think, people were joking, saying it was only a vehicle for Chivukuvuku's boundless personal ambitions, because he was sidelined that within UNITA. But in the meantime, he's then managed to pull some influential figures also of the MPLA establishment on board. And so that's sort of, he's proclaiming a third way to break up this bipolarity between UNITA and MPLA. And he's been given surprisingly lots of space in the media, which obviously then people say is a tactic from the MPLA to divide the opposition vote, which it will, probably. And UNITA has become more credible in actually formulating policy alternatives, or at least an alternative vision for Angola, than they did in 2008 when they were just, you know, we're not the MPLA. And I think they were themselves surprised by their capacity to draw large crowds, especially in Luanda, but also in the provinces over the last 2 years when, you know, rallies in Luanda gathered over 100,000 supporters. But, you know, due to the skewed playing field ahead of the elections, it is very doubtful if the results of the elections will actually reflect the strength or the popularity of UNITA.
Let's speak perhaps about the socio-political situation in Angola. Of course, it's come from decades-long civil war. It has now had a period of relative peace. It is the largest oil-producing, or one of the largest oil-producing and oil-exporting countries in Africa. So vast, vast material wealth there in the country, and yet there's a huge gap between the rich and the poor. Is the population any further along the road of understanding the democratic process, of understanding the need for democracy in development?
Yes, definitely. I think between the last elections and this year's, the situation has changed really drastically. The last elections were still overshadowed by the experience of the civil war. And so no one, be it from the population or from the opposition parties, challenged really the results, although it was obviously flawed, because the government party has played into those fears, saying, you know, anything that would undermine the stability and the reconstruction of the country, you know, an opposition win would plunge us back into civil war. Basically, that was a very thinly veiled threat, and this year, I think since last year, there's been an emergence of a civil society that hadn't been there in such a form before. That is a non-party affiliated youth movement that started protesting for the benefits of peace that the MPLA kept promising. You know, when in 2008, in their campaign, they promised the creation of 1 million jobs, the creation of 1 million social houses, and none of that's been delivered. And for the young generation that grew up only, you know, knowing the last years of the war, they aren't stupid. They know that Angola is one of the biggest oil producers in Africa, and they are increasingly wondering where that money is disappearing, why they are still living in shanty towns with no running water, no guaranteed electricity, why they can't find a job, why they have to bribe their way into university. So that frustration is growing. And last year has, for the first time in Angolan history, basically, found a way of expressing itself publicly. And that's really been a game changer, because then to see that these students were, I mean, they were very small in numbers, but symbolically it was very important to see them go out in the streets and, you know, reclaim their rights. And obviously they were arrested and beaten up and harassed and prosecuted. But it was a signal then also for opposition parties and churches to also become more vocal in their demands for change, for better redistribution of the riches of the country, and to call for the Sanchez to step down, because he is increasingly being seen as the root of all evil in Angola, because he and his family and a close coterie of associates are monopolizing basically the economic power of the country.